Welcome back, everybody, and hello to my co-host, Mark. This is the Dangle Venture Boys. I am your host, Johnny. I'm here with my good buddy.
Your co-host, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. I know I already called you out, but hey, that's how we do it in the DE, the Deutschland. Yeah, we're here to talk about that beloved animation and Adult Swim classic, The Venture Bros, right? We're here to talk about two episodes. We're gonna deep dive into them, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like. Most of the time, it's usually stuff we liked. I'm going to give you a really obnoxious recap for each episode, because, hey, that's what gets my jollies off. We're going to talk about some parodies, references, all that fun shit. And, Mark, I think we got some fun stuff today, don't we?
I think we do. I don't know. I am enjoying my time here anyway, but yeah, generally fun. And also, glad to be back, and just want to give a shout out to anybody joining us for the first time. Well, hey there. What took you so damn long?
Yeah. Welcome to the Dangle Venture Boys, everybody. Well, Mark, why don't we tune our communicator watches into episode 9, Are You There, God? It's me, Dean. This is a good reminder to everybody that is listening that if you don't want our recap, which pretty much goes over the entire episode and spoils it, here is a good place to stop so you can watch now. Otherwise, let's get on going. Team Venture finds themselves in grave danger in the Amazon. The danger of the Candiru. When Dean notices a pain in his no-nos, the Monarch and Team Venture split up so that Dean can get medical attention. It comes in the form of one Master Billy Quizboy and his associate, Pete White, of Conjectural Technologies. They investigate what may be a deep space parasite on Dean's junk, while Brock and Hank get a tour of the Mighty Monarch's flying cocoon. Billy operates on Dean's testes, and Brock instigates a fight on board his captor's ship. When all is said and done, we find everyone back into the Amazon, waiting for a fish to swim up their dog dork. Dog dork, that's what he says. Yes. Yeah.
Your dog dork?
All right. I like to start this out by talking about our cast members, if there's any new and notable first appearances, different characters of that. And the only one that I saw on our list from the wiki was the introduction of Conjectural Technologies. So this is the team up of Billy Quizboy and Pete White, who are going to show up quite a bit. We've seen them both before. They work for Conjectural Technologies. They're kind of like a spinoff or a subcontractor of the Venture Industries, different stuff like that. So we will definitely be seeing a bit more of them. Little fun fact just for you to know, Mark. My Wi-Fi router at my house, currently the 5.0 gigahertz band, is named Venture Industries. The 2.4 is Conjectural Technologies.
Look at you go, you fucking nerd.
It's been that way for like a good 6 months. It makes me very fucking happy. All right, Mark, I need you to tell me what a rusty venture is, because I keep hearing that it might be this and it might be that, but I need a little bit of clarification here.
Well, to the best of my understanding, Johnny, a rusty venture is when you go traveling and, you know, maybe you just don't trust the water in the country that you're in. Or maybe the water comes in weird little cardboard boxes and makes it taste weird. So instead you opt to only drink tiki drinks. But if you're like me, and I know I am, your kidneys don't know how to filter out pretty much any food dye at all. So every time you go hang a piss, it's like a rainbow of mystery of, am I dying? Am I a Smurf? What is this rusty color thing coming out of me? And you go, oh, that's right. Too many Mai Tais. That is based on a true story.
You're rusty venturing into the toilet. Oof.
I can't process the dye and blue curacao, so I will piss like Gatorade, like that glacial steel color.
Wow.
That's pretty great.
Like I would be afraid if I wasn't so in like almost in awe, because that's like a party trick in and of itself. Hot damn. That's just exactly what anybody wants though, right? Hot blue Gatorade. Mark.
Reminds me of my first time. What?
What are our standout moments or jokes? What did you get in here before? Because I've got quite a few in here, but I want to make sure I give you some room.
Yeah, sure. Number one, Candiru are super real and super scary.
I noticed that too. It's like there has to be some basis in this, right? And my cryptozoology guy is going to be the one that knows if they're real or not.
Yeah, they are actually a type of catfish. They are about they can be as big as 2 inches long, and what they do is they find traces of uraic acid, which you produce when you hang a piss, and they will follow that trail up into its source and then extend their pincher and extend their pectoral fins and jam into your dick hole. And then they'll just sit there
Ooh.
and numb up on your tasty, tasty excretions. They are crazy
Ooh.
painful to remove. They are 100% a real thing. I think that they feature pretty heavily in an episode of Death Clock when Murderface pisses into the Amazon and like you see an entire like
Yes.
horde swimming up his pee tube. But yeah, Candiru are real and they will fuck you up, dog.
Would you say that that's our urine joke for the episode?
I put it in the log, yeah, so that's what I'm going with.
Awesome. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was like, shit, I just realized we didn't have a pee-pee joke this episode. Yeah, we did.
I don't know, dude. I'm starting to think like, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. Where there's Venture Boys, there's I one of them. Maybe it's I don't know who it is. Maybe it's Doc Hammer got like a some I don't know. Without condemning or condoning, I don't
Somebody may
know.
have a pee-pee fetish. Hey, we don't kink shame here at the Dang Old Venture Boys. You do you, just don't do it to me.
It depends on what it is.
Okay.
I really messed up, and I should have said that the Candiru will swim up your no-no place, which is the super adult term that my teenage son has used to refer to their genitals in public.
I don't know what's more embarrassing, that or the fact that it takes one of your kids to go, "Hey, they used to call my dad Rusty."
Because that's the color of his urine, because all the mommy's little helpers.
Mom, I was gonna say, what's the name he gave for him? But you got there before me, Mommy's Little Helpers.
Okay, so you know what a rusty venture is, John? It's taking Fijin and dumping it into a cup of coffee, and it tastes like weird stale tea. I don't know how to feel about it. It's really gross, and I'm mad that I'm only going to get one cup of it because I want more. Oh God, I
Oh
can't stop drinking. Oh my God, it's terrible. tag in. Give me some of your standout moments here. I hate to dominate.
Yeah. No, of course. Well, my first one is a very serious question that I wrote in all caps, Mark.
Okay.
Have you been shooting dope into your scrotum? Freaking Doc Venture is such a pot calling the kettle black, right? Him and his mommy's little helpers, that dude will get high on anything and everything that he can. And yet he doesn't like that Triana Orpheus. She looks like she might do dope. Have you been shooting dope into your scrotum? Like, come on, man. What the hell? So our introduction to Billy and White. Billy just walks onto the screen, is talking about cleaning up their house, and describes their toilet bowl as a bucket of payday bars, which means that either White is having full, like, consecutive shits and not flushing, or he is shitting and then going back later to continue to shit. It's like the if it's yellow, let it mellow rule, but with shits. And I just want to know what the fuck is wrong with Pete White? But a bucket of payday bars is like the most visceral image I've heard in a while on this show.
It's pretty gross.
My last one here before I'll tag you back in here is I'm realizing we've seen the Monarch fuck up a lot of his own henchmen in this show, right?
Yes.
It's his surprise party where he just totally wastes a dude as he walks in and just goes, "Oh, sorry about that." Oh, well, what else you got?
Well, so number one, I gotta palpate the region. That is a horrible way to describe what he's talking about.
Palpate the region. Ah.
cutting into an ambush, darts the minion. Surprise!
Yep.
I don't know if this is a pro or just a side note or whatever, but dude, based off of Hank's little monarch getup, we could totally cosplay as like shitty monarch henchmen. All we would need is like a bronze tan colored romper and a black hoodie.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, and we also need a crown, right? That we can pin to the top of the cowl.
Yeah, but we'll fight about it. So we'll like be more in character. You know, we'll argue back and forth about it. It's my turn to wear it now.
We just have to decide which one of us does a better Ray Romano impersonation, because that just decides who's going to be 28 and who's going to be 21.
Oh, I don't know, Mark. I used to do a pretty good one.
Oh, jeez. Why does anybody like me? What's my appeal? I talk kind of funny? How long did my show run? Oh, here's my giant brother. He talks kind of funny, too. Oh,
I think you won. That was a terrible Ray Romano.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know. I guess I just like being in Ice Age movies. Jeremy Bizarro's kind of cool.
Sorry. Okay, we're not going to do more Ray Romano. Keep going, buddy.
Whose job was it to feed the butterflies?
Oh, I love that whole sequence, right? Like, Brock... I have it down in here that Brock throwing Monarch a bone, right? Because he sees he's got nothing to do and he wants right. him to be able to like kind of show off his badassery. And it's just like, fine, I'm going to go down there and fuck with you myself. If, you know, if Doc's too busy to do this, I guess I don't have anything better to do. I go kill some dudes for you.
See, I thought he was giving him a birthday present. I thought it was a genuinely sweet moment. You know, it matters more the gifts that you make than what you can buy. And what can Brock make? Well, open-handed murder of your henchmen that seem to be so expendable you can kill them on your own. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
I like that Grandma's ashes are in the Grand Canyon. That's kind of cool. Like, it could be anywhere. We navigate by radar alone, even above the moon or the Grand Canyon. Oh, I guess it's in the Grand Canyon. Pretty good. I like that. It's a good way to do it.
Right?
And then the final lineup there of like consoling Dean after the operation, and Triana just walks up. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to you, right? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's in here, too, is the fact that his dad brought Triana to see him post-op. Like, oh, what the fuck, man?
No, man. That's a good move. You don't want him hanging around your boy? You embarrass the shit out of your boy in front of the girl, thereby making the boy useless to the girl. Or something, I don't know.
I guess.
It makes sense if I was being a shitty amphetamine-riddled asshole. It would make sense.
I guess, but it's a gamble because it could turn into, hey, I'm being totally open and raw and honest with you right here and just kind of accepting this. And now I'm kind of a cool dude because of that. Just saying, it's a gamble. Okay, I've got a couple more here. First off, Mark, are the Smurfs egg layers or are they mammals? I want to know your opinion here.
Well, so we already know that they were created by Gargamel. No, that was just Smurfette. So they are, I'm assuming, an amphibian species that, much like frogs, can switch sexes at will to repopulate.
Okay.
But then to that end, it doesn't matter what they are. Why are you asking me? We can just go to the source and ask the one that lives on Brock Samson's dick.
You know, in Germany, they're called Die Schlumpfe, and they have gummies everywhere. And it makes me very fucking happy because they're very tasty.
Okay, now I gotta tag in and ask you, who's hotter, Smurfette or Dr. Girlfriend?
Dr. Girlfriend, which is totally why I'm gonna go into my last rusty venture for you here.
Ah, excellent.
It is 100% Dr. Girlfriend. And you want to know why?
Why is that, buddy?
I don't think that Smurfette is going to be open to using puppets in the bedroom, but I know Dr. Girlfriend is.
This is okay. So, like, I'm not saying that every artist only has one story to tell, and that artists will typically put aspects of themselves into things. I'm also not entirely sure that the runners for this show aren't super horny all the time, always. Because, like, last week we got revealed the weird cucking fetish of Dr. Girlfriend and the Monarch. So, like, yep. I'm just, I don't know, man. I also really like that line of, go ahead and do what you've got to. Oh, honestly, that hadn't even crossed my mind. And it's like, yeah, because Brock Sampson is a good dude, and there is nothing sexier than consent.
He is a Swedish murder machine, not a Swedish fuck machine.
Agree to disagree. This entire series has shown us otherwise.
He murder first, then fucking. He has priorities here. That's where the designation lies. He's a Swedish murder machine that fucks. How about that?
All right.
No, I love the, like, you and I are always one to kind of talk about fun character designs and like weird shit that they do with character models. And were you expecting to see Dr. Girlfriend basically in a giant fucking Kia Sorento, I just got a brand new car bow wear over her tits? Like, I wasn't ever expecting to see that on somebody. And yet, I've seen it, and I liked it.
But she still has the hat on.
I thought it was a fun way to do this. But she still has the hat on. She's got a matching pair of underwear. Mm-hmm. At one point, they animate her super buff. Like, they intentionally, like, almost give her abs. And I'm like, okay. Keep going. Like, where are we going with this?
But there is very much a pulpy art style in this. It's like Frank Franzetto, Boris Vallejo shit. Like, we see it often. You see it in Brock a lot. But, like, even the Monarch is anorexic as all shit, but he still is kind of ripped in his own right. And I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's helping to flesh out those characters itself, right? Because yeah. he's kind of a whiny bitch most of the time. And yet, he's got to have something going on. Maybe it's his dog dork that's really awesome. We're going to move on, because every time I say dog dork, I make myself laugh. We're going to go into parodies and references. What did you notice while watching this episode?
Really quick here, I want to shoehorn in the three cons that I have, if you don't mind.
Oh, please. Yes.
Number one, leave Triana alone, because she's a good girl. Just leave her be. Torsion is no joke. Kids, roll gently. Palpate gently. It's a real thing. It'll fuck you up. And finally, Dr. Girlfriend messes with me, because once again, I have you lying to me about not being horny for a cartoon. This is now episode, what is this? Episode 5 for this. And in 5 episodes this goddamn show, I've been horny for cartoon characters. Now is the story that I am an artist and my problem is I have an extreme fetish that is, you know, so unknowable that it would ruin my public image. It's all right, because nobody does that with fish, unless it's a Candiru. Maybe.
Ooh.
Maybe.
This just means that I have to make sure you have a set limit on what Dolly images you can populate using X-rated cartoon characters.
You know, these projects, between this and Dangle, man, I'm ruined as a human.
Ooh. Okay, because I know we've got some holdovers from Dangle Podcast, those King of the Hill fans here. I just need to make the connection here, because otherwise somebody will make it for us and I'll feel stupid that we missed it. Mark?
Okay.
Dr. Girlfriend likes puppets in the bedroom. What do you think she feels about the manger babies?
Oh, John, I reckon that backdoors into the sex dream that I always wanted to have but never got to have, where I get the reach around from Gurgle Gurgle. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Parodies, references, now that you've done your
God. Comments. Oh, God, Dr. Girlfriend, yeah, X-Mark, X-Luann. No, I want Dr. Girlfriend to be Reginald Featherbottom.
Oh, hey there, what? How's your ham and eggs, what?
This is too dark. I should cut all this out. Welcome to my stepdad who just started listening, or he said he started listening. I hope it stuck around to 20 minutes, Neil, because it got real dark. Johnny, talk to me about them parodies and references.
So I noticed a couple of them in here. First off, I noticed that Pete White is playing none other than Grand Theft Auto. At least that's what it seemed to be as he was playing it. I went, oh, this is not the first time, even in the last, 12 months that I've watched an animated show reference Grand Theft Auto. That's kind of nuts. All right. Razzles, Mark, are candy gum, and I swear to God, I've had them before, but I don't know. I don't think I've ever had the one that's actually supposed to be gum. I want to say I just had them that they're like, it's like popping candy within like a Mike and Ike almost. And it was really good. But maybe I'm thinking of something different that just has some obnoxious name. Finally, the other last parody reference I noticed is that Dr. Girlfriend is reading Friedrich Nietzsche, his book Beyond Good and Evil. Yes. And I thought that was kind of funny, considering that she is, in fact, dating somebody that works for the Guild of Calamitous Intent. What did you notice here?
The title is a reference to Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, a book about a girl who wants to get her period.
Yes, which we've also covered in Dang Old Podcast, have we not?
Yeah, that's the one where Peggy fakes as being a nun. Yeah. Wow, callbacks and references to our own fucking show. What is this? Two wizards did it?
Ooh.
Two Star Wars references. Obi-Wan Kenobi, whatever, that's really easy, but the wiki makes me feel dumb when I don't call out the obvious ones. And the monarch looking at Hank going, I am your father. Pretty good.
Yep.
You already nailed White playing GTA or propane.
Propane, thank you.
Forget the lead up line, but they joke about how you can't be like Fonzie living above the garage. Fonzie, in fact, lived in the apartment above the garage in Happy Days. The lead singer of NXS died by doing a karate. That would be autoerotic asphyxiation, kids. And that's why they reference it and bring it up. Just do what you're going to do, guys, but make sure you got a spotter. And then finally, the fetish doll that Dr. Orpheus gives to Dean. It is a reference to a horror movie. I don't remember which one. Ooh. I know it's a horror anthology, and I want to say it's Trilogy of Terror, but I can't tell you, and I wasn't about to scour the internet for mini tiki demon doll. So that's what's up.
Nice.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I got, buddy. I mean, I'm sure there's others in there, but what did we miss?
There is, yeah. So, hey, that's we're going to hit the wiki here real quick because I like doing that for each of these episodes. Because you and I we're only human, right? But I feel like we've done quite a good job here. So we have Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, the Judy Blume novel, which you got. We have Beyond Good and Evil by Friedrich Nietzsche, which I got. We have the Candiru, which both of us got, but even this says it's disputed whether it actually does what's claimed by the monarch. So if you're telling me that you've got something in there that flies up pee holes and latches itself where it's supposed to, I'm going to take you at your word here. I'll go with it. We have a potential reference to Donnie Darko. The conversation about the Smurfs apparently is one that they had in the 2001 film Donnie Darko on nearly the same topic. I watched that movie once and did not care for it. So I'm like, eh. Guys, if you're out there and you like Donnie Darko, I guess let us know if that's ripped from there. You hit Fonzie, right? You'll be given the grandest of accommodations. It'll be far cry from sleeping over Dr. Venture's garage like so much Fonzie. a GTA 3. Pete does that. Yada, yada, yada. Pete even refers to one of the gangs from the game by name called the Yardies. I feel bad that neither of us called this out, but also it's such a quick joke that I didn't even have time to write it down. There's a reference to Grover Cleveland in this episode and his presidential time machine.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that it's Grover Cleveland because isn't that supposed to be the H.G. Wells time period?
Oh, maybe.
Okay, maybe not, but it definitely gave me H.G. Wells' time machine vibes, stuff like that.
Because that's like Victorian England, I think? Yeah.
Yeah. So Ian Dury and the Blockheads. Hank's comment that he has a Razzle in my pocket is a reference to Ian Dury and the Blockheads' song Razzle in My Pocket from their 77 album New Boots and Panties. They already talked about Michael Hutchence from INXS, NXS. Yep, let's not do that. Razzles are a semi-hard candy that became chewing gum in your mouth. You hit the Star Wars references here of Hank Venture, Monarch being Hank Venture's father, and the Monarch dismisses Samson's statement that he'll kill him, implying he would free himself from the ropes. And he says, what are you, Obi-Wan Kenobi? Yeah, literally, that's both in there. We hit testicular torsion. Guys, it's real. It can definitely require immediate attention from a urologist. And says White and Billy's descriptions of causes and dangers are relatively accurate. Even though it's incredibly disturbing to think of your testicles as that tiny shriveled up peanut in the peanut casing that you find. Like, that was very visceral today, too.
But, man, dude, if you need somebody to learn a lesson, you do it with easily approachable metaphor. Like, absolutely.
Right. We have our reference to the Smurfs in here. And, Mark, you hear this? That is our like, quick... polite golf clap, because the last reference here is the Trilogy of Terror 1 and 2. Dr. Orpheus gives Dean a Zuni fetish doll from the movie's Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah, yeah. I know about my shit, so, man. Also, Grover Cleveland was the 22nd and 24th president of the United States, only president in history to serve two terms non-consecutively. First term was 1893 to 97, then the second one was 1883 to 1855, whereas The Time Machine was written in 1895, so maybe, question mark?
Maybe, kind of close. Okay.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Hey, I'm just glad it's like in the ballpark. Like, I'll say that's the win. Awesome. Well, Mark, we're going to move on to our next segment here, which is Who's That Guild Member?
Who's that guild member?
We've got a couple of these here that I think are, one of them is just interesting to note. But we have yet again, the boy's parentage being brought up into question, right? We don't know who the boy's mom is. And I find it interesting that the Monarch is indicating that he may in fact know who their mom is. Now, Mark, do you believe that he's just screwing with them when he says, I am your father, and that you may already know who she is? You think that whole thing is a put-on, or do you think he actually knows?
I don't know if he's screwing with Hank, but I think this is directly the writer screwing with us, because we all know what nerds we all are. And, you know, he has the line, it's somebody you already met, and I want to throw my hat in this prediction ring and say that it is Baldovich.
Ooh, okay.
She gave young Rusty his first Rusty venture. Interesting. Furthering that thought, because in Careers in Science, that's like the opening line is Doc Venture going, no, I started it 16 years ago in a moment of passion, and I'll end it here in front of God, Helper, Brock, and everyone. So it would be on his mind that he's going back to see his ex-love. John, my own plot deepens and thickens. Okay. And don't tell me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to know.
Exactly. So another bit we have here is we're starting to get a good peek at what guild politics look like, right? They actually pull out the manual. They have a manual as to how these archings are conducted. And it's been going on for a very, very long time, because the guild has been around for a long time. The OSI has been around for a very long time. Long enough that we have laws like Rusty's Law that are now named after poor little kids that, you know, get really hurt and need medical attention, and yet everybody's too busy playing a villain and hero to understand it, and so he gets ignored and probably has lasting damage and trauma and all that other fun shit. But yeah, so we're starting to get to see some of the guild politics, right? Like, you haven't met the Council of 13, but they're coming before too long, and so you'll actually start to get seeing some of the governing body of the guild. So that's interesting. I thought it was interesting that Doc Venture talks about how he could have potentially fixed this testicular torsion. How, Mark? Well, because he didn't do enough stuff with the prototypes to figure this out. So that may or may not tell you anything about the boys and what's going on with them currently. I'm going to leave you to that. I'm not going to tell you what sort of prototype he may be talking about because I don't want to give it away. The one I thought that was just kind of interesting to know that I caught on this viewing of this episode is that one of them has a dog dork and the other doesn't, meaning Hank has a circumcision, but Dean does not. And I thought that was very interesting that only one of your kids gets circumcised.
I'm kind of bummed that I'm not going to have kids because I would totally do that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Ajax gets to keep his, but the other boy won't.
Well, I got to say that I'm going to insist that my fake daughter gets one too, but that makes me sound awfully African dictatory. I'm kidding, guys. I don't have a daughter. All right, Mark, we are to Brock's
kill. I like how what you're kidding about is you don't have a daughter, not that you don't support female circumcision.
Guys, there's lots of songs and protests and shit about female circumcision. Clearly, I'm not a fucking monster. You've heard me rail about equity how many times in hundreds of episodes of this show? Mark, we are to Brock's kill of the week. What do we notice here?
Very little, but I took... So the one that I marked down was him just like... giving Monarch the birthday present of danger. You know what I mean? I couldn't think of a better way to do it. Yeah.
I put Brock's cocoon rampage because that's the only thing I could think of it, right? Like he's just messing some shit up. He's causing a mess around.
Okay, so we're going to call it that. You want to call it the birthday gift beat 'em up?
Birthday gift beat 'em up. I love it.
Okay, cool.
All right, well, if that's all we have for Brock's Kills of the Week for this episode, then we're getting to one of our final episode or final segments here. And that is, Mark, Two Wizards Did It. Do we have any references to our lovely sister show, The Two Wizards, this week?
No, not really. I swear to God, we talked about Candiru at one point. And if I had to guess, it'd be on the fishing episode, but... that one was lighthearted and kind of cute, so I don't think we talked about fish swimming up your pee tube. So I'm just going to go ahead and say no, Two Wizards haven't done it yet.
All right. Well, damn, that's actually pretty good, because usually you guys have gotten something in here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that brings us to our ranking system, so I'm going to break it down for you real quick, and then we'll give this guy a ranking so we can scoot on over to our other episode. So at the very bottom, we have on our substance use rankings for this episode, we have our must-haves. These are episodes that are not very good, right? You're going to struggle watching the Venture Bros this week. You need to have a little something on board. You must have something on board in order to make it through the episode because it's just not very good. It's not very entertaining. After that, you got your dabble do ya. And that means that it's not the best episode in the world, but you're going to need a little bit of something to fully appreciate it or find a joke or two a bit more funny than they probably should be. These are also not super great episodes, but hey, at least you don't have to be blitzed out of your mind to enjoy them. After that, you got your fun edition. And this means that it's an episode of The Venture Bros that you don't necessarily need to indulge, but it's always gonna help to have a little bit of extra something there. You're gonna laugh out loud on your own. You may as well start to compound that, right? Add a little something in. After that, you got your not necessary episodes. These are episodes that are perfectly funny, 100% on their own, stone cold sober. These are excellent episodes of The Venture Bros. You're going to see a lot of really good time jokes. You're going to see some fun inserted characters and different things like that. Some world building, all of that stuff. The only thing that gets better than that is our hurts to indulge level. And this is episodes that are so important, so funny, so pivotal that it's actually going to hurt you to imbibe and indulge and find yourself not paying attention at 100%. These are the episodes that are really going to start to flesh out some of the characters and get you some awesome backstory, but also have some of the funniest jokes out there. So, all right, Mark, on a ranking of must-have to hurts to indulge, what did you give this episode?
I don't want to say it's a must-have, but honestly, this episode is painful because, like, I'm a dude and I've had issues with my nuts before and I just, there's some scenes in here and I'm just like, wow, I've been to that party. I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing against the episode. It's a solid episode, but like, whew, a spoonful of whiskey helps the torsion go down. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. What are you thinking, buddy?
So I gave this one a dabble, do ya? Because it wasn't a must-have for me either. I think there is some fun stuff to be seen in this episode. We are starting to, like, I guess we're not starting. We're just establishing even more the presence of the Monarch in this universe. He seems to be the main figurehead of menace within Doc Venture's life. Like, we see a couple of other people, and they'll show up multiple times, but really, the Monarch is established pretty early and pretty strongly as his main number one hench. Like, that's the one you're going to see quite a bit. And so, seeing the back and forth, getting to see a little bit of the guild politics of, okay, I guess I have to give you 2 days to figure this shit out, but we're meeting right back here at the Amazon. I'm still going to get this done. I still get my hostages. All of that stuff. Shows you, like, cool, no, I'm in this for the long haul. I'm willing to essentially subvert my vengeance for the next 2 days because I have to follow the rules and I'm not a monster. I also really need that dental, you know? I think that's really, it's a lot of fun there. But really, this, what pulls this away from a must-have is I don't want to be super messed up when Dr. Girlfriend shows up in that bow tie. Like, that's going to ruin the episode for me. I'm going to stop. I'm going to go do things I really wish I hadn't. Like, the more inebriated I am when that picture shows up, the worse off it is for whatever bathroom I'm about to be in. Wow, that tells people an awful lot about my habits, doesn't it? Or does it? You guys don't know if I'm just saying any of this just for good measure, because it's good entertainment.
He's not. I used to live with him. I know exactly what's up.
You'll never know.
Oh,
damn it, Mark, leave him the mystery. All right, well, hey, what do you say we hop on over to our next episode?
Let's do it, buddy.
We're going to turn our communicator watches in for episode 10, Tag, Sail, You're It. I think that's how you're supposed to say it. If not, then that sounded really stupid. Brock leads a strike team in a particularly dangerous mission. The Ventures are having a garage sale. The Mighty Monarch causes mischief with his minions, and Doc proves he's just as lazy when he's not conducting super science. Hank and Dean run a grinder operation, and no, not that grinder, Mark, and everyone seems to want a piece of the arching game. As the garage sale spins out of control, Doc finds he's made a decent chunk of change. All right, so we have a lot of notables' first appearances in here, different things of that nature. So we have Rick Danger, the intangible fancy. He's the, like, ghost ethereal guy that shows up a bunch of times.
That's not the bearded phantom or the bearded ghost or whatever? Dr. Girlfriend calls him out.
No, I don't believe so. Okay, no, cool. No, it's not him. No, not him. Not him. We have Green Goo Scientist this is the only one he's in, but he's the one that says he wants to press charges.
Okay.
Augustus St. Cloud. This is going to be an interesting one because he has a very different voice in this than he will in the rest of this series. Augustus St. Cloud is in basically the world's wealthiest power nerd. And he's the guy that you're seeing when everything starts to spin out of control. Like, somebody zeroes in on a guy wearing maroon, essentially like a Zap Brannigan outfit. And, like, they zoom in on his ass.
He's Girly Magazine's scientist. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so that's Augustus St. Cloud. And I'm not going to bring him, like, I'm not going to tell you too much more about him because he will come up later in a much better way. But I want you to know that he has a very different voice from here on out. I didn't even realize he was in this until I was watching it and I noticed that he was in our notables. And I went, what? Where is St. Cloud? And you don't notice him because it's not his voice for the rest of this series.
I see. So, okay.
Drastically different. Perhaps the biggest arching villain person that we're seeing here is Phantom Lim. Also, basically just another character from My Hero Academia, feels like.
Yes.
You know, he just, I mean, half these guys that work for the guild is basically just that. We have the introduction of Hank Co. Hank Co will come up multiple times. It's not just a one and done grinder and lemonade stand. So get excited to see more of the ingenuity that is Hank Co. It's very exciting. Usually if that shows up, it's a solid good episode. I'm pretty sure you could get Hank Co. shirts at one point, and I don't have one, and I'm sad about it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mark, I need you to tell me what a rusty venture is.
Oh, buddy, a rusty venture is when you get this sweet new job writing for DC or Image or Dark Horse or Marvel Comics, and the CEO or whoever the creative designer wheels in and goes, "All right there, true believer, give me your new ideas." And you have no idea, so you just start ass-pulling things, and you come up with Floating Tetris Headpiece Man, and the Phantom Limb, and the Beer Man, who always has enough beer on hand to get just the right amount of drunk to forget that his wife left him, but not forget to pick up his kid from soccer practice.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, that brings us to our standout moments and jokes, our rusty ventures, if you will. And Mark, I'm going to start this off by asking you a question. No weapons allowed. Who would win in a fight, Anne Frank or Lizzie Borden?
Lizzie Borden, because she's got a body count.
Maybe, but she's also, I mean, I want to say Anne Frank has got what is it on her side? More modern day... like stuff, essentially. Like she was around in a later time period, and so she's got the ability to use different things, different methods. I don't know. I like to think Anne Frank would be pretty scrappy.
So, not really, dude. Lizzie Borden was born in 1860 and died in 1927. Just a sec, because I know.
Yeah, but she got her body count in 1880.
Doesn't matter. She's still got a fucking body count.
Yeah, but I also said no weapons.
Whoa, okay. Here, I'm going to blow your fucking brain apart. Hang on. God damn it. Google, you piece of shit. Okay. Oh, wait, no. Mark is dyslexic and can't read. That was the problem. Lizzie Borden died June 1st, 1927. And then my head blew apart because Anne Frank was born June 12th, 1929. And I was like, what the fuck?
Mm.
But they, and wow, it's really weird. They were born really, that's fucking weird. Anne Frank was born,
like, there wasn't a lot of time that separated them.
Well, so Anne Frank was born June 12th, 1929. Lizzie Borden was born July 19th, 1860. Like, they were both summer babies. That's, it's not weird, but then they were only separated by 2 years, and it's so weird to think about, because like, it's like you're saying one of them is very closely associated, they're both associated with very different times in the world, but they were only separated by 2 years. That's fucking wild.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like to think that Anne Frank would still figure out a way. I don't know. She's got some ninjutsu and shit that she's learning up in that attic.
That's called jiu-jitsu, John. Jiu-jitsu.
Wow.
I can make that joke because I love the movie The Hebrew Hammer.
Okay.
He uses jiu-jitsu.
I love it.
Shabbat shalom, motherfuckers.
I'm going to give you another rusty venture here, and it just comes in the form of a laser gun bargain bin, because I really want one of those. I want to play with some laser guns, Mark.
Please and thank you. Please and thank you. Also, this is tantamount to Dr. Farnsworth, or Professor Farnsworth, just selling his doomsday machines to make some quick cash. I love the idea of, like, the super smart scientist needs to, like, pawn off his shit because he can't make rent. It doesn't matter how like that's how Tesla died, you know. Tesla died penniless, and he would have given the world free electricity, and instead fucking Donald Trump's daddy got all the plans. It's all bullshit, man.
It's definitely something I feel like we've seen before. Obviously we're not looking at any mutated anthrax for duck hunting in this, but you know, I don't know. You think anybody's actually, like, looking? I mean, we've got the misters here, right? The OSI operatives, the agents and shit like that. Mr. 1, Mr. 5, mm-hmm. Mr. 12. And they're kind of overseeing this, but it doesn't seem like Brock is really stopping anybody. And he has somewhat authority to do that. To basically say, hey, please don't sell this giant bargain bin of laser guns to, like, people who are going to use them to kill other people.
There's a weird through line here with Doc Venture, too. Like, you know, the first episode, we see the Ooray, and he just can't wrap his head around how it might be used for not good purposes. Like, I kind of appreciate his method of, like, I'm just making a thing, it's not my fault, but then at the same time, it's like, oh, well, you know, that's what fucking gun manufacturers in America do, and they keep killing our kids, so, nah, maybe I take back my entire stance. Fuck Doc Venture. I don't know.
Ignorance is not an excuse. Give me some of your Rusty Ventures, buddy.
Oh, Rusty Ventures here. There's a really cool animation bit when the lead black agent is yelling into number 7's sunglasses, and they animate his face in the reflection of the sunglasses. That's just a cool bit. I like that. That's where I think we blew our animation budget, or that's what I'm going to say to resurrect an old bit here. Lizzie Borden 100% could take Anne Frank in a straight fight, even if we're saying, like, level playing field. Like, I'm just saying. She, if for no other reason, like, you know, Lizzie Borden was described as being a larger woman, so you know she got some, like, swing behind them punches.
Okay, interesting.
Monarch and girlfriend's relationship, it's kind of fun to watch. They're just kind of happy in line. I think it's cute. They're just kind of genuinely cute to see together. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. I like it.
They are kind of just goobers together, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Last episode, we're seeing them kind of whip things up in the bedroom, and we've watched the whole cuck thing, but also, like, they're just normal people that kind of like to hang out with each other for the most part.
Yeah. It's like a good relationship. Like, you like to hang out with the person you're with. It's a good thing.
It's one you root for, you know? Despite the fact that they're both evil people, you want to root for them to be together.
Yeah. Phantom Limb, I just wrote LOL. What a stupid premise. And then you hit it on the head and you're like, oh yeah, it's a My Hero Academia character. I'm like, yeah. And then, because I got a lot of notes, but most of them are references. I really liked the Ventures living room. I'm just going to die on the hill that the 60s were the peak of human aesthetic. I want that fucking fireplace, dude. That, like, clamshell fireplace. God, I just want that so bad.
Okay.
That's what I want in my life, man.
Okay. I'm going to hard disagree with you, and while I like the 60s, the 30s were the pinnacle, not the 60s.
Okay. Because
the 30s gave us Art Deco.
Okay, fair enough. I also...
But that's me.
You're inclined your own wrong-ass opinion, all wrapped up in wool and no liquor. Your opinion, much like President Hoover in the 30s, sucked. But tush, there's a smart-ass joke for you kids. Last week you were calling out how the wiki credits Helper as Soulbot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I caught it today in the credits because there was no post-credit scene in this. It's the first time we haven't had one. But he is listed as Soulbot/Helper.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe, I don't know what that is, but there we go.
We'll have to do some research on it for sure. But I really want to know what celebrity has the pony grafted to their stomach. Like, I have to know. I have to know who has the face of a pony grafted onto their stomach.
Matthew Broderick. So when Sarah Jessica Parker gives him a blowjob, she can, like, see a friendly face. Yeah.
Wow.
Seabiscuit
just,
2.
Wow.
After Sex in the City.
Oh. It's like her uncredited role in Secretariat. Mark,
I'll be damned, she wasn't War Horse. Crazy.
As long as it's not Equus, then we're good. And that's about all the horse jokes I have for today. Mark, I think Doc Venture is basically Homer Simpson. He steals Orpheus's weed whacker and then tries to sell it. And Orpheus actually calls him out for it, which I'm glad. Because you know Ned Flanders would never do that. He would just gladly say, oh, thanks, Homer. I've always wanted a set of TV trays that say Flanders on them.
Are you gonna need all that stuff up at Terror Lake? Oh, yeah, Flanders.
Like, but, okay, you just borrowed that from me last week. What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
So, I think that as we continue to watch this and you see the mechanics of what makes a good arch and what makes a, like, you know, a good villain versus a good hero, all that sort of stuff, I'm curious what you think. But I really think that Billy and White would make a very good arch combo for Dr. Girlfriend. Like, Conjectural Technologies and Dr. Girlfriend could make some very interesting stuff when it comes to that, right? There's levels to this, and I feel like they're at this point they're kind of ranked on the same level. If you think of it as her and not her and the Monarch, So I think it's really cute that Billy and White would even approach her and just say, hey, I'm interested. Please consider, you know, consider us as arch enemies for you if you ever wanted to. And she's really sweet about it. And I'm like, well, who wouldn't love Dr. Girlfriend after that? I'm really curious, Mark, when does it turn creepy to run a lemonade stand? Like, how old do you have to be for it to be not creepy to run a lemonade stand? Because I have a feeling that like 16, 17 years old is a little too old. And I appreciate that it's also a grinder stand, but even still.
Con, the internet has ruined the word grinder for me, and all I could think was they were making another pee fetish joke, but this time it was a gay pee fetish joke. That's my fault,
no,
not this show's.
No. This lemonade, Latin lemon party. Mark, come on.
I'm going to go watch the girlies make lemonade.
So the answer is, it's not creepy. In fact, it's not creepy until you're about 30, and you're like the weird, like, Better Call Saul-ass manager in the mall. Otherwise, you know, them girlies making lemonade should be at least 18 or older. But that's just me talking.
Okay. My last Rusty venture here, and I appreciate it because, hot damn, if you go to a super scientist's garage sale and you find this, I actually absolutely would have had the same reaction. I will pay whatever you want, and I'm wearing it out. I want a, quote, real lightsaber.
Yes, please.
But I'm like, how many of us would not also just immediately do that, right? At the prospect of having our own lightsaber. Like, yep, doesn't matter. You name your price. It's coming home with me.
Fair enough.
What are your cons?
Yeah, sure, cons. There's not a lot here. Number one, return your goddamn tools and return them in the condition that you got them, if not a little bit better. Always fill up the engine of the machine you are using with its preferred fuel type. Always, you know, oil that chain on the saw. Always sharpen that shovel blade. Don't be an asshat. That is my biggest judge of character, is how people return things that you lend them. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah,
like how people treat service workers and animals, and then how they return tools. Hell, I'd even say tools above like animals, because like, I don't know, sometimes dogs get annoying. You know, how would you feel if I walked into a room and I was slobbering and just stuck my face in your crotch? Like, it's gross.
If you did it, Mark?
You've been having those dreams again, haven't you, Johnny?
You'd be fit to be tied. Sorry, I just watched that episode on my flight.
No, not at all. I'm glad you knew the follow-up line.
Yes.
Hey, I'm going to cut in prematurely into Who's That Guild Member?
Who's that guild member?
Ooh. It's you. It's you. It's you, fucking Krautball. You, oh, captain of duking and not flushing. You're a villain. You calamitous motherfucker.
We do get our pee-pee joke at the end of this, by the way, after he's like, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna flush in there. I should want to piss on this thing, and I don't even want to do that.
Horrible. Oh, hey, there's
awful.
Hey, there's a side note that you reminded me of. I've never been more seen by a line in this show than when Monarch goes, it's like 2 inches taller than the one at home. It's all throwing me off. I understand. I understand exactly what that means. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my last con here is the subtitles misspell the word Padawan.
Oh, no. I wasn't watching with subtitles, but that's easy. That is such an easy fix for you guys to do in post. Like, come on.
Padawan is how they spelled it. I'm like, guys, come on.
Wow. Yeah, that's not even close. And we are years after the fact. Like, we're half a decade after episode one where Padawan was introduced. And I'm going to say that for the people that don't read the Extended Universe stuff. Like, we are years after that. So it's not a... That's an easy fix.
No, because, it was introduced in the prequels. Like, Qui-Gon refers to Obi-Wan as his Padawan. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, let's move on to our parodies and references then. What did you notice here?
Calling back once again to Dangle Podcast, to Living on Red's Vitamin C and Orange Juice, whatever the hell that one was that I got too drunk to record. The song Convoy. The guy's handle is Rubber Duck. That is how... who has the stupid microphone that isn't the MC Hammer megaphone? And he's
Dean does, because I wrote down here that it said he might need someone to send his love down the well.
Exactly. Yeah. But he says, this is Rubber Duck, come back, 10-4, or whatever the hell he says. Rubber Duck is the main guy in Convoy, but also in Smokey and the Bandit is there's a Rubber Duck.
Nice.
The frogmen, or the men in the scuba suits, I don't know what you call them, they buy a set of Rock'em Sock'em Robots, because once again, now I'm nitpicking, because I don't want the wiki to foist me by my own Leon Petard.
Yep.
Sound and the Fury is how Monarch refers to his phantom poop. It's actually a William Faulkner novel, and it's basically the Bill Dautry family story about a family in the South over 30 years and their decline and fall, their loss of religion, and then the complete death of the entire family. So there's that. And then finally, the lightsaber. I don't recognize the lightsaber. I know it. But it's not Anakin's, it's not Luke's remade one in Jedi, and it's not Vader's. I just can't tell. It's the lens that's throwing me off there. The end point, the dickhead of the lightsaber, if you will. And it's got a yellow blade, and I'm like, well, for now we're just being goofy. But, fun sidebar, Doc Venture gets all uppity about, like, yeah, Kenner Toys didn't want things that cost $2 million to produce, because Kenner Toys were the ones that produced all the Star Wars toys.
Nice. Yep, exactly. Well, shit, you took 2 out of the 3 that I noticed, so good on you, man.
Hell yeah, dog. what's the other one?
Yeah, I definitely noticed... I noticed Deanie O'Toole, if you will, and his very mischievous, I'm gonna talk into my MC Hammer microphone. And I also noticed Kenner Toys, which made me happy. But no, I swear, when 21 grabs the lightsaber and he goes... All right, I'm going to take down Brock Sampson. I know I can do this. I swear to God he does the Star Wars Kid viral video bullshit, but I honestly, he may have been doing it before that was actually a viral video. Mm. I didn't look up and see, so I'm sure that the wiki will correct me if it's not that case. But I swear he does like the I'm going to try and do the double-sided lightsaber and... Mm-hmm. All that stuff. You've seen the Star Wars Kid viral video. You all have. It's been around for 30 fucking years at this point. Anyway, so let's see what the wiki does have to share with us today that we didn't already hit. So Anne Frank and Lizzie Borden, we already hit that one. You hit Convoy, especially with the idea of Breaker 19. This is Rubber Duck.
Mm-hmm.
It is reference to C.W. McCall's song Convoy. We didn't talk about Depeche Mode. Come on, he's in Depeche Mode.
No, he's totally straight. I saw a thing on VH1 about it.
On the VH1.
On because the VH1.
Dr. Girlfriend, yes, Dr. Girlfriend talks like Hank Hill sometimes. I saw a thing about him on the VH1. Which is very clearly behind the music, but we know that. Kenner Toys, right? That's in here. Macbeth. That's apparently what Monarch is talking about. His comment that his effort to defecate was all sound and fury signifying nothing is a quote from Shakespeare's Macbeth, although the original line does not refer to intestinal ailments.
Okay. I thought you were going to go with, his like last monologue there in the venture lab when like girlfriend gets all horned up for him and he talks about like, I shall strike out at him with the hatred of my heart. And I thought he was referencing Moby Dick, but I haven't read Moby Dick in 10 years, so I didn't want to be a dickhead.
No, you're good.
Dickhead.
It's okay. Guys, we were both theater majors at one point, so we're going to say that Mark and I both knew just instinctually that this was the Bard. We get to play that card because we spent way too much fucking money getting a theater degree that we don't use. Mark, next one here, Mr. Microphone. Battery-powered microphone, which Dean finds. It's a short-range handheld radio transmitter. It is created by the Set It and Forget It. They make a really cracking vinyl vault, Mark. It is Ronco.
Are you talking about Ron Propeel and his caps?
Ron Propeel. Yeah. He's practically giving the awards away to people like Ogden Farnsworth or Ogden Wernstrom. Yes, that Ron Propeel. You hit Rock'em Sock'em Robots. I don't think we talked specifically about the misters here. But they're supposed to resemble the Secret Service, right? They're the ones that are supposed to be guarding over the Venture compound.
Mm-hmm.
I always assumed it's OSI, but maybe it's not. We have Seven and the Ragged Tiger. One of the items purchased at the sale is a t-shirt for a 1983 Duran Duran album, Seven and the Ragged Tiger. Okay, so Monarch's speech in Dr. Venture's laboratory. Quotes, oh, you're going to love this.
Okay.
Quotes from the 1982 film Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which in itself is quoting Herman Melville's Moby Dick. So yeah. Guess what? You don't look like a dick. Oh. You look like a real smart dude.
Oh, where's my fucking tiny golf clap for the second time this episode? I demand it now, sir.
Right here.
Yes.
Right here.
Yes.
Okay.
Feed me.
We have lots of 21 and Star Wars here, right? His actions and use of a lightsaber are obviously references to Star Wars. And I'm going to give myself a nice little clap here because Henchman 21's movements with the lightsaber mimic those of the 2002 Star Wars Kid internet video.
Hey,
so,
hey, you hear that?
Yes, I do. Guys, there's a lot of glad handing for ourselves today. I promise we're not just whacking off in our respective sheds. Dr. Venture refers to the security guards in black suits and ties as Brock's little ska band. I know how much Mark loves ska. That tracks. Let's see here. Dr. Venture placed ads for his for the tag sale, the garage sale, in Valpax. Mark, when was the last time you got a Valpak in the mail?
Oh, yeah. Not in a... I mean, I still get like the giant wad of ads and shit for local businesses and Burger King coupons, but that's about it.
Yeah, no, this is a Johnny's retro rage for a second here because, guys, they used to send you a giant collection of shit for like once a year pretty much called a Valpak, and it was all these local businesses around you, and you'd be able to like redeem coupons and different things like that. Yeah, it was obnoxious. We have a Behind the Music, which we already kind of hit, and then apparently we also get to hear the Wilhelm scream. When Henchman 21 confronts Samson, I did not hear the Wilhelm scream. I'm usually pretty good at pointing that out. So maybe on my next watch through, I'll catch it. Okay, we are to Who's That Guild Member?
Who's That Guild Member?
And let's see.
It's Johnny!
Thank you. Let's see, we're going to see a bunch of different people here, but the two that I noticed that will come up the most frequently with the most impact... because we didn't even notice, or I didn't even mention, because we've already seen him before, that we saw Baron Unterbeit again, mm-hmm. and we got to see him take off his chin for a second, which was kind of cool. But the ones that we're introducing for lore building reasons, Phantom Limb will be a very big hit, right? Like, he's going to be a very big deal before too long, and St. Cloud's going to come back in a bunch of different ways. So, even though it's not... the St. Cloud you will know in the future. He technically debuted here, so that's important.
Okay.
Mark, do we have a kill of the week in this episode?
Once again, I'm kind of at a loss because, like, there isn't, but I want to backdoor it into, there's that shot, and I want to say it's Unterbeit takes the old man's rascal scooter and is beating the shit out of Mr. Impossible with it.
Okay.
That's great. But yeah, I mean, like, unless it's like Brock kind of getting bored and then kind of kicking a little bit of ass, but no, I don't really think we get one this week, do we?
So I didn't notice one.
Okay.
I was curious if you did, because I was like, all right, I'm watching this and I'm not like super eagle-eyed. Guys, fair warning, I've only had about 5 hours of sleep to record today, so it's been a day. But no, I didn't notice it like specifically, and I was curious if you did. So no, that makes sense. I think that we get to give it default to the one that happened last episode.
Okay.
Like, that's going to be the one we officially add into the mix here. So now that we've gone through both episodes, Mark, do you want to run through our breakdown here? And please feel free to take more than one breath while you do this.
Oh, I want to see if I can do it in more than one breath, because as of this episode, we are at 25 and starting at the top, and now we're here. From the terrible secret at Turtle Bay, the mummy in the landing gear, the gator in the landing gear, battling or beating down the muggers with the door, Dia de los Dangerous, Checker Auto Parts, parking lot dart battle, Chupacabra kill on the plane, Rusty venturing in the Monarch's lair, careers in science, we got, damn it, two breaths, putting the Phantom Spaceman in the pretzel bender, strong arming man strong in space from Homeland Security, knifing sass and shaving the sass. The talented Mr. Brisby gave us Mandalay in the hallway, Molotov cocktails, and the duvet of death. Bathroom dick beat down in the beehive. Eeny meeny mind magic, the mind blowing fireworks suck. Ninja slash cowboy dream massacre. Ghost of the Sargasso, pirates gave us Pirates on the X2, Murder on the Poop Deck, and Burning Down the Ship. Ice Station Impossible was the polar bear Arctic ass-kicking. Midlife Chrysalis, we got the Murder Memories montage featuring Death Darts, Harpooning Sharkmen, Sub-Zero, and the Molo Colt Cocktail. And finally, Destroying Dean in Training. And now with this week's episodes, Are You There, God? It's Me, Dean, the Monarch's Birthday Gift Beat-Em-Up. And Tag Sale, You're It, did not participate. So, Johnny, what are you saying is Brock Sampson's greatest beatdown to date? Because mine is still Molotov Cocktails and the Duvet of Death.
God, there's so many to choose. There's just so many to choose here. I almost want to revert to the dick beatdown. Like, that's got to be one of the funniest that I think I've seen here. So I'm going to go with that one.
Okay.
Dick beat down. Yeah, I'm a little sad that we didn't get more this week, considering that we've had a decent amount of Brock in our first episode. And, I mean, it was him leading an entire essential, like, mini militia this episode. Like, we should have gotten something cool out of him with a bunch of different people, but...
Well, you think he'd want to lead by example, you know? And he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, that's okay. So, Mark, before we scoot on to our ranking here, I got to know, have two wizards ever done anything that is tangential to our episode this week?
Yeah, two wizards did it when we talk about the Star Wars trilogy and the prequels, and it takes about 6 hours. Don't listen to that. Because, one, I just found out my company was closing and got super hammered in the first, like, 30 minutes because I've been drinking with my boss, like, 2 hours before we started recording, and then, like, I forgot we were doing it that night. So I was just shit-canned hammered.
No.
Oh, yeah, I hold it together. That's the one that's the original trilogy I was just shit-canned hammered for. And then I promised Josh that I would only, you know, not freak out about the prequels. And come to find out, I like the prequels, like, as much or equally to the original trilogy. And it's like 6 hours. Don't listen to that. But what you should listen to is our Urban Legends episode when Josh talks about a local Ohio cryptid known as the Melonheads, which are what? That's right, hydrocephalic children that run around the forest haunting people, making out in cars.
What sweet little water babies they are.
Every time they're around, I gotta fucking pee. I don't know what it is. I just hear the sloshing.
Ooh. All right. All right, Mark. Well, hey, we're going to do a ranking and keep on rocking and rolling here. So I'm going to start us off. I think this is also a dabble do ya, right?
Okay.
I put in here that there's not a lot of immediate world building, right? It's an episode about a garage sale. But you meet a lot of people in this episode that you will get to revisit later on in the series. It's really starting to build the world, really showing you just how many people are out there that are considered... villains that are, you know, members of the guild for Calamitous Intent. You have to imagine that each one of them has got somebody that they're arching, so there's at least that many good guys that we haven't met yet. They range in age of, hey, we've talked an awful lot about Jonas Venture and how this stuff started with him. So, you know, there's older guys like the Action Man and stuff like that, but you've also got up-and-comers. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Billy and White are up and comers. They're going to eventually start to get their own archings, hopefully. So, yeah, it's just kind of fun. We're really starting to see it's as bizarre as it sounds, the breakdown of how these two forces battle each other is a lot of fun for me to see kind of unravel itself. So, but this is definitely a dabble do ya. I feel like you're going to need a little bit extra here because there's not a lot of a through line here. You have to really want to watch like the Monarch screwing around to really enjoy this episode.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you give this one? I'm curious.
So it's a weird tie between dabble do ya, cause you're not missing anything. It's like you said, it's really just their Monarch being weird, Unterbite being kind of wonky and shit. But then I'd also say that it kind of hurts because there's a lot of background gags that you're going to miss.
Ooh, okay.
I think if you're like two or three beers deep, you know, you're probably going to miss Mr. Incredible getting the shit kicked out of him with a rascal scooter, that type of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, good call.
Very yeah, so I don't know where it falls in. I mean, I drank it with a or I watched it drinking a cup of coffee this morning, so I'll just say a dab did me, I suppose, but yeah.
All right. Hey, I think that works.
Right on.
All right, well, do we have anything else to say about this episode, Mark?
I just want to generally call out, hey, Dangle Podcast did it, because how much of this episode was predicated on us referencing the Dangle Podcast?
Yeah,
which
guys,
you guys should all go check out.
You really should. We have an entire entire breakdown of every single King of the Hill episode out there. If you're just joining us for Venture Bros, please go check out Dangle Podcast. It's where Mark and I kind of hitched our laces to this rail. I don't even know what the hell I'm saying. That's not a saying. Hell, go watch it. You guys had to have watched some King of the Hill. So go enjoy some Dangle Podcast. All right.
What were you trying to say? Hitch your rail to the...
I don't even know. I don't even know. Just, we're going... I told you guys, 5 hours of sleep. It's great. Mark, before
boo
we
fucking
say our
goodbyes, who, Captain Sleep Privilege? Fuck you.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. I'm sorry. I love you, buddy. I'm sorry.
Yes. No, you're fine. Before we move on to our promotions here, I do got to ask you, because I forgot to ask you last week, and, you know, this is going to be a more impactful one at the end of, I think, of the first season, but we'll have a tracking here. Sure. Mark, have you started to drink the Kool-Aid of Venture Bros? Has this made its way onto your Mount Rushmore yet?
I mean, I'm at the party. I see the bowl of punch. I definitely grabbed the glass of the punch. And I'm just, like, sitting there, like, trying to chat up, you know, the any cartoon character.
Orpheus next to you?
Well, dude, she's out of my league. Like, hell, at this point, Baldovich is out of my league. But, yeah, it's not quite, buddy. It is still firmly rooted in the, you know, bedrock around my Mount Rushmore, but... It's getting better, man. We might take some of these chunks and, like, make a little statue and, like, tack it to the side. That kind of thing. How about you, buddy? Is this
nice.
Still your Mount Rushmore, or did something knock it off, or?
No, this is still firmly up there. Rewatching this, I think it's accurate to say that I don't find myself ever wasting time watching this show. And that's important, I think, to note in a show that you've seen more than once, twice, three times through. Because sometimes you get to a point where you're, okay, cool, I'm watching this because it's familiar and comfortable and I don't have to think about it. And I'm okay with that with certain things. I can't tell you how many times I've watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's been a lot. And yet, sometimes it feels like a chore to watch that show. It doesn't feel like a chore to watch this one. So, yeah, still firmly up there, man.
Right on. Right on.
Yeah. All right, well, before we get out of here, I'm going to do our plugs and then I'll toss it off to you. You guys can always reach out to Mark and I. We are the Dang Old Venture Boys. You can hit us up on Blue Sky. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. I think we're probably still on X somewhere. Twitter X.
I post
maybe,
every week.
Hey, Mark
I'm trying
posts
to think
every week,
of
so.
New and better ways to engage you bastards. And
guys, you can hit us up on any one of those platforms if you want. We're also on Blue Sky as a collective for all of our shows. We are the High Hammock Radio, at High Hammock Radio, excuse me. You can always reach out to me. I'm on Blue Sky and on Instagram. I'm Krautball, Kraut as in sauerkraut, and Ball as in Swedish meatball. Mark, where can they hear you the rest of the week?
Oh, if you want more Mark in your... You want Mo Mark in the mornings, well, by all means, go check out the I Can't Wait to Show My Kids podcast, a weekly cinematic celebration where me and our buddy Brad, and sometimes you, Johnny, we all come together and we fill in gaps in our cinematic knowledge and discuss that super important question of when do I show it to my kids. You can also find me on the Two Wizards podcast where me and our buddy Josh... excuse me, PBR Belch. Me and our buddy Josh come together and stare into that void so you don't have to. Right now, we are neck deep in a three-part series about volcanoes, and I can tell you, listeners, and I can tell you, Johnny, this will drop by the time the series ends, and I am so sick of volcanoes, I could just explode. Thank you for listening,
Got
guys. Em. Thank you for being here. Johnny, thank you for another wonderful day, and I am looking forward to next week, buddy.
Excellent. Guys, we will see you at the Venture Compound next week, and until then,
go Team Venture!